Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You're going to hear a lot more in the weeks ahead about the Cotton War. It is the first serious challenge that's been brought to the World Trade Organization against American agricultural subsidies under new rules of free and fair trade. It could have dramatic repercussions for people here and around the world. Here's the quick sketch. American cotton farmers get over $1.5 billion a year to help them grow and export cotton. This subsidy makes it very difficult for farmers in other nations to compete, particularly those living in poorer countries in Asia and Africa and Latin America. And so Brazil is taking the U.S. to court at the WTO. Many trade watchers are saying the Brazilians have a very strong case and that a ruling against the U.S. would shine a harsh light on the way that U.S. subsidizes other commodities such as sugar and dairy products. On this hour of the program, we'll talk with farmers and experts, but we'd like to hear your input as well. Do you think the United States should be subsidizing its cotton farmers? Or has the time for this kind of government support passed? Who gets to set the rules? The United States or the World Trade Organization? And do you think that subsidies are an example of unfair American protectionism? Or is protectionism precisely what American workers need right now? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to begin by talking with two cotton farmers. Shelton Wilder is on the line from his farm in Longtown, Tennessee. Shelton, it's good of you to take time to be with us.
Yes, sir.
And João Luiz Pessa is also with us. He has a cotton farm in Primavera do Leste in central Brazil. Pessa, it's good of you to be with us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Pessa, I understand that you are one of the farmers who's a part of this challenge. You're putting some money behind the Brazilian challenge to the United States? Hello, Pessa?
Yes, excuse me. I thought that was you talked to the farmer from the United States.
No, the question is for you.
Can you ask it again?
Indeed. Are you one of the farmers who is behind this challenge to the United States?
Yes, you know that all the farmers in Brazil are behind this case because who is supporting the lawyers and the case? You know that the government of Brazil is very poor. So the farmers have to support this. So I think that all farmers in Brazil are supporting this.
Now, Pessa, tell me about your farm. How big is it?
You know, I am not alone in my farm. It's we consider a big farm here. It's about 7,500 hectares. But we are in six farms that join together, and we plant together in this farm.
And tell me, if you can, in simple words, why the subsidies are such a problem for you.
Well, you know, we have many countries that subsidize their crops, like in China, and you have in Europe. But the case of the United States is it's a problem for us because the United States is each day consuming less cotton in the internal, the local market in the United States. In spite of that, the United States is producing each year more cotton. So that's our focus. The focus of the United States, the farm in the United States, is to export. And they are responsible for 40% of the cotton that they are in the international market for export. So the subsidies allow the farmers of the United States to be more competitive than the other countries that produce and export cotton.
Okay, Pessa, I want you to just stand by for a minute. I'd like to talk for a minute with Shelton Wilder. Shelton, your farm near Longtown, Tennessee, how big is it?
I farm 3,000 acres of cotton and 400 acres of corn.
Now, is that a farm that has been in your family for some time?
Since the turn of the century, yes.
And tell me, in your view, is the cotton still as strong a crop as it would have been for your grandfather, your great-grandfather?
No, sir.
Tell me why.
The cost of living and the American way of life.
You don't make a lot of money farming cotton, is what you're saying.
No, sir. We are very much thinking about discontinuing. It's not a profitable. Cotton is hard, real hard, real hard.
And even with that money you get as a subsidy, it's not worth it.
It's tight. I'm not fixing to quit. I've done it for 40-something years, and I'll probably do it till I stop. But I don't. I won't have any children doing it. No.
How many people work on your farm, Shelton?
Today there are 5 people employed, and there'll be 6 to 7 during harvest or planting.
And Pesa, how many workers are working on the farming complex that you are a part of?
Well, when we had the season of cotton, we employ about 250 people.
And is that a big part of the difference here? As I try to understand what goes on in Brazil and what goes on in Longtown, Tennessee, Pesa, this is a question for you. The subsidies that happen in the United States, they are designed to try and make the U.S. more competitive, as you say. So what's the problem?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that, you know, it's the United States has, I don't know, unfortunately, I not speak his name, but this farm in the United States is saying that the cotton is not profitable, and he needs the subsidies, and he thinks that's not profitable for him. But you know what the United States is giving in subsidies? That is $1.54 billion each year. It's, you see, all the value of the crop of the Brazil is $1.12 million. So you see that they are giving more money than we can produce here in cotton. So if they have this all this money from the government, they can put their cotton in the international market in a very low price. And for us, it's very hard to compete with that.
Pesa, if you were an American cotton farmer, how would your life be different?
You see, if I were cotton, the question is a little different. You know, the United States has many ways of to subsidize their farmers. They have the money to do that, and Brazil that doesn't have this money. So you see, we are not against to give subsidies to the farmers to the United States. We are against to give the money for subsidies that can increase the production in a level that the international market has problem with the price. Okay, so, if the government has a lot, the taxes of the government of the people of the United States, it is forgive to the farmers. We're not against that, but we are against that when you pay and the farmer produce cotton, independent if the market is buying or no, if the lack of production in other words or no. That we are against. For subsidies for export, we are against that.
Okay, I get that. Shelton Wilder, let me come back to you. If you were asked to go to the World Trade Organization to make your case, if someone were to say to you, why should American cotton farmers continue to receive these subsidies, what would you say, Shelton?
Well, I'm not familiar with the international trade other than I know my own cost. And my cost per acre of cotton for labor alone is $70 to $80. That's a lot of that legislated all the way from workman's comp to insurance to minimum wages. I'm told by a Brazilian farmer that was at my gym that his payroll cost was $1 an hour, and ours is, in this country, you know, is much higher, 15 times that much. And the workman's comp is very expensive. Technology fees in this country ran me $70 an acre on cotton last year. I'm told in the world.
Technology fees, Shelton, that's money that you have to pay for the
Monsanto. Monsanto.
Work that goes into designing the genetically modified cotton, right?
So we have Bolgard Roundup Ready, and we are told, and I don't know, that other countries pay the fee on a small amount and then they save their seed and reuse them. We can't do that. We have to pay that fee every year. I'm not making a lot of money. 70, 71 cents is a break even. That's where we're supported at in this country. Part of it is because of the cost of our country. Just our standard of living is what it is.
And if that subsidy on cotton was taken away, would you just start planting something else, soybean, whatever, on that land, or would you be in bigger trouble?
In my area, and I was told the person that interviewed me, I live in a very close proximity of a big metropolitan area. We would just sell the land for houses. I mean, it's not, when it gets to where it won't cash flow, you just do something else. And that's that. I would plant houses rather than crops. I live very close to the Memphis area.
Shelton, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you.
Shelton Wilder farms cotton near Longtown, Tennessee. And Joan Luis Pesa, I want to thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you very much for you.
Joan Luis Pesa lives in the city of Primavera do Leste in the central part of Brazil. Two cotton farmers, two different stories. We're going to go now to the Christian Science Monitor studio in Washington. We have there two guests. Aloysio de Lima Campos is economic advisor to the Brazilian embassy, current delegate of Brazil at the International Cotton Advisory Committee. And Gary Huffbauer is also there. He's former deputy assistant secretary for international trade and investment policy of the U.S. Treasury. Currently, Gary's a senior fellow at the Institution for International Economics in Washington. Gary, I'll start with you. Is this going to be an easy thing to untangle?
Absolutely not. And if you can bear with me, I'd like to run out some figures. As you said, there's about $1.5 billion of subsidies that the U.S. government pays. And we have about 15 million, I'm using very round figures,
yep,
about 15 million acres in cotton. Now, if you work out the arithmetic, that's about $100 an acre of subsidies. That number gets built into land values. And if you take $100 and say that's going to be capitalized at 10%, you work that into about $1,000 of value an acre, and you add, and then you work out that arithmetic. If you have $1,000 of value an acre on account of our subsidies, times 15 million acres, you have $15 billion of land value in the United States in the cotton farming on account of these subsidies.
What you're saying is, now, if those subsidies are pulled, then you yank the value of that land out from underneath the farmers.
Right, and absolutely. Now, a farmer like Shelton, who lives near Memphis, can turn his land over to planting houses, as he put it, and
right.
I applaud that. But there are a lot of cotton farmers who don't live near big cities, and their values would go down. They don't have an easy alternative, and they would really suffer, and there would be a lot of bankruptcies, as well as great hardship for people who would look forward to living, selling that land, and that would be their retirement. So the whole point of this little story I'm telling is that we've had these programs for 25, 30, 40 years, and it's going to take a while to unwind them.
All right, we have to take a very short break here. Aloysio de Lima Campos, I'm coming back to talk with you about the Brazilian perspective of American subsidies. But Connection listeners, this is something we talk so much about in politics in this country and in very real terms in farming areas about subsidies, what their meaning is, what the effect is, and how much they affect not only work in this country, but jobs overseas. So we'd like to hear your input on this crucial case, which is currently before the WTO. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about cotton. You're going to hear a lot more about it in this country because it's seen as perhaps one of the most crucial cases to come before the World Trade Organization in a challenge to the way that the United States subsidizes its farmers. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And with me right now, Gary Huffbauer, senior fellow at the Institution for International Economics in Washington, and Aloysio de Lima Campos, 20 years as an economic advisor to the Brazilian embassy in Washington and current Brazilian delegate at the International Cotton Advisory Committee. Aloysio, do you see this Brazilian challenge as a particularly key moment in the argument against U.S. subsidies?
I can't help but agree with you, Dick, on this. The situation is that this is the first case, so whether it was Brazil or somebody else, it will make it a big case. is the first time that agricultural subsidies are being challenged at the WTO. And what brought this about was the situation of subsidies in cotton. The big problem here, and what makes it a big thing, is that since the latest round of trade negotiations in 1993, the United States and Europe managed to put in something called the peace clause, which meant that by which every other country in the world agreed not to sue the U.S. or the European communities on their subsidies, agricultural subsidies, if they didn't go over the 1992 subsidy levels that they practiced. In the case of cotton, the United States simply shot up that those levels starting in the period of 1999, and which was about $1.2 billion then. And just in 2001, 2002, that number went to $3 billion.
So why is that so hard for Brazilian farmers?
Well, what's hard is that what PESA tried to explain, and I don't know if it was well understood, is that the subsidies in the United States make the farmers produce cotton independently of what happens in the market. Under normal conditions, if prices are going down, farmers simply don't plant. You're not going to plant something that you're going to lose money on. In the United States, just to give you an idea, the cost of production, and this number I'm going to give you does not include the land rent that Gary referred to. It just excludes land rent and seed value. The United States has a cost of 68 cents per pound. In 2001, prices in the world market were around 31 cents per pound. Now, why would you plant cotton that will cost you 68 cents if you have to sell it for 31 cents?
Aloysio, let me just stop you there for a minute, because Gary Hufbauer, in many ways, that's so crucial to understanding what the current situation is and why it either should or should not change. Why is the United States providing such a dramatic subsidy to cotton farmers, such as Aloysio described?
Well, the main reason is that cotton farmers have a lot of political punch in the Senate and in the House, and we've had farm subsidies going back to the Roosevelt era, so that's that is indeed a long time.
Is this nostalgia or affection farm?
It's more than nostalgia. I mean, I would emphasize the political battle which goes on every time a Farm Act is passed, but then you have the tolerance from the urban population in this country. And I think the reason the urban population is so willing to consent to these subsidies is that we do have a lot of nostalgia about farm, particularly small farmers. Now, cotton does not really fit the nostalgic image because most of the farms are very large, and some of the farmers receive very large subsidies, like upwards of $300,000 a year. So that's not small, but the image is the small farmer who's having a hard time, and that's why urban legislators will vote for this, for these continued programs.
Gary, let me just stop you there, because we've got a call specifically on that topic. Come in now from Cumberland, Rhode Island. And Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question is, essentially, it's my understanding that family farms have been increasingly pushed out by the more corporatized farms, and I just wanted to find out whether the subsidies applied equally to the corporate-owned farms and the family farms. If it only applied to the family farms, presumably it wouldn't make a big impact on the global market if the U.S. farms are predominantly corporate-owned. And if they're corporate-owned, it seemed like they should be more subject to the economic competition forces of the market.
And Gary, this is a question that is raised in Brazil. The Brazilians saying, hey, you're subsidizing these Texas cotton barons, not the family farms. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, it's more fair than unfair. More than about 80% of our subsidies go to quite large farmers who are on average far wealthier than the urban person. Now, if we were doing it on family or individual basis, we'd have some kind of income support. The large cotton farmers and other large farmers getting subsidies realize that that wouldn't give so much money to them, and therefore they really try to keep the program organized around price support, the 70, 71 cents a pound you mentioned, which doesn't distinguish between small and large farmers. I'm very sympathetic to this line of criticism. On the other hand, as I said at the beginning, if you tried to take all this land value away immediately, you would create huge distress in communities across the United States.
Brian, let me come back to you in Rhode Island. Do you think that this is a way that we ought to differentiate in understanding subsidies in this country, that we shouldn't be in the business of subsidizing large agribusiness organizations, but we ought to be, as a country, working to help out the family farm?
Well, it seems like if the reason for a lot of the subsidies is nostalgia, the nostalgia is for family farms and not for large corporations. It seems that large corporations should make more economically based decisions.
I'm asking about you and your tax dollars. If some of it was going to subsidize family farms, would you feel better about that than if it's going to large corporations?
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good to have you on the program. 1-800-423-8255 to join us. And Aloisio, I want to come back to you on something that Gary mentioned a little bit earlier in the program. And this has to do with the way that subsidies in America might come to an end. Gary made the point, and I think quite strongly, that if agricultural subsidies were yanked away from the farmers in a year or two or three, that it would have such drastic economic consequences for farmers in the United States that you know it shouldn't or wouldn't be done. Would you, as a representative of Brazil, agree to phasing out the sanctions so there isn't that one-time hit?
I understand perfectly what Gary is saying, and I see what the situation is. The problem for Brazil is not the fact that U.S. farmers are receiving subsidies, and Bess also mentioned that, is the fact that a superproduction is being made out of these subsidies, and this exportable surplus is being dumped in the world markets, driving prices down. Now, if the United States government decides to subsidize its farmers, we're not against it. This is a decision of the U.S. government. The problem for us becomes when these exportable surpluses are dumped into the market. So if, in other words, if
But you're arguing for a reduction of the subsidy. You're arguing taking it off export. I thought it was a stronger call to actually put an end to these subsidies.
Well, we want an end to what is called the trade-distorting subsidies.
It's pretty subjective, isn't it, though? I mean, you can't draw a line and say that's a trade-distorting subsidy and that one's not.
Well, for example, if the government tells the farmer, here's your money, do whatever you like with it,
right?
That's one thing. But the government says, here's the money for you to plant cotton. That's a different story.
And Gary Huffbauer, that's what you call a green subsidy, the idea that you just give the money to the farmer, say plant whatever you want, and watch that subsidy because it's going to get smaller before it gets bigger.
Absolutely. And the way you put it, Dick, shows why it's politically difficult to give truly green subsidies. As an economist, and I think I would have a lot of agreement from other economists, what we say is this. The U.S. government should survey land which has been committed to cotton for a number of years and should agree that it'll pay, let's say, $100 an acre in 2005, $90 in 2006, $80 in 2007, and so forth,
right,
and phase it down. But the farmer would not be obligated to do anything by way of planting cotton or any other crop on that land. Now, that is a totally green subsidy. Now, you could juice it up a bit by saying, well, he ought to be environmentally sensitive and so forth, but no commitment to having cotton. And I think Brazil and the other countries complaining about the U.S. program would agree with that. And I think most cotton farmers would find that possibly acceptable as a transition. But you can see the battle in the Congress because you and other media people would say, hey, look, we're sending you know, $300,000 to this person, and he's not required to do anything. He can go to Bermuda. That doesn't sound so great, does it? So it's really hard to transition from these so-called trade-distorting subsidies, and in the technical parlance, so-called amber and blue box subsidies, to green subsidies. But that's the way we ought to go, to green subsidies.
1-800-423-8255. Agriculture subsidies, so often pointed to as a distorting feature in countries like those in Europe, particularly in Japan, and here in the United States. To Fort Bragg, North Carolina now, Adam is joining us. Adam, what do you make of this?
Well, I appreciate it, Dick. Two comments. The first is that this entire question of agricultural subsidies and their effect on trade is a much smaller aspect of a much larger question for the U.S. and, frankly, the other countries you mentioned. And that is that much of the reason for the higher cost, I mean, the gentleman earlier was quoting the 60, you know, went from 30 cents, basically 35 cents to 70 cents in cost for cotton. And the reason for the cost in these countries being so much higher in the other countries, I mean, it's not magic and it's not secret. The fact of the matter is the regulations in the United States, incur for the farmers the costs that have to be passed on. So the fact of the matter is we are coming at a crossroads. We are either going to have to, if we want to maintain the regulations that drive these costs, then we're going to have to maintain these subsidies. And if we're not, if we want to do what the WTO wants us to do and drop the subsidies, then we're going to have to drop the regulation. I mean, and this isn't new, nor is it, you know, germane only to agriculture.
Okay, but Adam, we're not talking
exactly what's happening to manufacturing.
All right, but we're not talking here about making cheese in Wisconsin to serve people in the northern United States. We're talking about subsidizing a cotton industry to the tune of $1.5 billion, so that cotton can be shipped overseas, thereby affecting the price of cotton all the way around the world. Is there a difference between the two kinds of agriculture subsidies? Are you hearing the distinction that Aloisio is trying to explain here?
Well, I'm hearing the distinction, but I think it's actually reversed. For example, within the United States, within an area where the regulations are relatively similar, when you're talking about going from Wisconsin to Michigan with your cheese, that's competition where the regulations are pretty much identical. But when you're talking about a country such as Brazil, I mean, do you want to call it a subsidy if a country does not require its farmers to provide health care for their workers, doesn't require their farmers to carry workmen's compensation or anything of the kind, heck, doesn't even have a minimum wage in many cases? I mean, how much money does that save their farmers, and how much money are they allowed to pass on in lowering the cost of those goods? Again, the competition is exactly what I'm talking about. I think the point is reversed because you have such varying degrees of what is driving these costs. I mean, unless Brazil is prepared to bring up the standard of living for its people by passing, you know, you're talking about minimum wage, a higher minimum wage, and workman's comp and health insurance. And if unless they're going to do that, of course their costs are going to stay low.
Adam, just hang on for half a second here. I want to bring in Robert Goodman. Robert is an extension agricultural economist at Auburn University in Alabama. Robert's been listening to our conversation. Robert, I'd like to get a take from you on whether or not Adam's got a strong case here, one that would even hold water at the WTO.
Well, I don't know if it holds water with the WTO. It sure holds water with me. You know, and getting back to some things Gary said, talking about decoupling and all, and decoupling is the word we use in ag policy to mean this decoupling our program payments from actual production.
Yeah, okay.
And we're going down that road, and we've been going down that road for years and years. And
Robert, come back, if you would, to where I began. This is the case that is actually going to be made at the WTO. These are the arguments that are going to be presented there. It's no longer a domestic argument here in the United States, subsidies good or bad. Does that mean that the U.S. somehow has to persuade people that the point of view that you're presenting, that Adam's presenting, should hold around the world?
Well, I mean, economists have a hard time with the word should. You know, I would make the point that they should hold water, and that we do have an obligation. But there are just a lot of different goals with farm policy, and cheap food is an important goal. Increasing rural income. I mean, we hear about rich farmers, but if you look at the statistics, rural income still lags urban income by a long ways. and farm income lags non-farm income.
What about the argument, Robert, that Oxfam and the World Bank and the other agencies make that as long as the United States continues to subsidize the production of something like cotton, that it causes, you know, poverty to deepen in countries like Brazil, like Burkina Faso, like all the other countries that are trying to make their own way economically with this crop?
Well, then look at the countries that spends the lowest proportion of its income on food. And is that a country that subsidizes its agriculture like the United States, or is that a country that doesn't? The United States pays the lowest percentage of its income on food of any nation in the world.
And that's a political decision made here in this country.
And that's another benefit of you know, we talk about spending this $1.5 billion. Well, gee, a lot of it we're paying ourselves,
but
we get that back in the form of cheap food.
Isn't that one of the reasons, though, Robert, why the cotton subsidy is vulnerable? Because it's not talking about cheap food.
Well, you know, it's an agricultural product, and they're all kind of interrelated, and it is in a way related to cheap food through the use of cottonseed as a feed ingredient,
so
a livestock feed. But getting back to the subsidy, and they're talking the Brazilian cotton farmers are worried about that the price of cotton is too low in the world market. Who does that benefit? Who does a real cheap cotton price benefit? It benefits consumers, and there are an awful lot of really, really poor consumers in the world that are benefited greatly by low cotton price.
Which brings us right back around to a place where we've been earlier on other programs, where if you want to spend $4 on that shirt at Walmart, then you need to take a look at whether or not you want these subsidies yanked. Am I right with that?
Yeah, that's right.
Robert, I got to stop you there because we're coming up to a break, but I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Okay.
Robert Goodman's an Extension Agricultural Economist at Auburn University in Alabama. Connection listeners, we are talking about those prickly agricultural subsidies on the program today, zeroing in on cotton, because cotton is currently before the World Trade Organization, and a ruling there could in fact have that world trade body forcing the United States to change its practices that have been underway for such a long time. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like you to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And as we've been mentioning on the program, the issue of cotton subsidies to farmers here in the United States is, as we speak, right before the World Trade Organization Dispute Resolution Panel. And what is decided there could have far-reaching implications for U.S. subsidies, whether or not they're involving sugar or dairy products, or any one of the number of commodities subsidized in this country. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear you on this subject. Next to Louisville, Kentucky, Melanie's joining us. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. My comment is basically, I was a grain merchandiser for a number of years and primarily bought corn and beans from local farmers in Kentucky as well as in Illinois. And what I noticed is that the farm subsidies prevented farmers, in my opinion, it was more of a crutch, and that it prevented them from making good business decisions because that money was there. And instead of planting corn or instead of planting something that would give them more income, they would continue to plant what their fathers planted and what their fathers' fathers planted.
Well, what were the farmers saying about it, though, Melanie? Were the farmers saying, you know, I think we'd probably be better off going to soy instead of corn, but I got these subsidies, so I have to stay with corn?
Well, I think historically, corn and soybean prices, and I would suspect cotton prices, haven't really changed much from since the Depression, since 1930s and so forth.
Yeah, you're right.
And so it hasn't kept pace. Now, as far as, you know, how they felt about it, they felt it was fine. It was something that the government should do.
Right, but I guess I'm wondering what happens if the subsidies are then phased out. Are those farmers saying we're finished if that happens?
Either they're going to – well, not necessarily that they're finished, but that they would have to move to different crops. Let's take, for example, in Kentucky, you know, with the whole tobacco situation. Now you have farmers that are moving away from planting tobacco, and the government is supporting them to into other businesses of planting other commodities. So I think it would force you, again, to make better overall decisions. And I totally think it's unfair from a supply demand perspective of the United States government supplying local farmers with subsidies.
Melanie, I want to thank you for your call.
Well, thank you.
And Gary,
if I may make a point.
Yes, sir, Aloisio, and then to Gary.
All right. I'd like to go back to the question of the cheap prices mentioned by a previous caller. In which he said, you know, if prices are cheap, you know, what's bad with that? What's bad with that is that the lower the international price, the higher is the subsidy, because under the formula here in the United States, the subsidy is paid based on the difference between the international price and a benchmark price, which is around 70 cents right now. So if prices go down to 31 cents, or go down to 20 cents, the more they go down, the greater the subsidy. And that's where the problem lies. And the more the subsidies, the more production. The more production, the more exports. The more exports, the least the price. So it's a perverse cycle that is going on right now, and that needs to be stopped. You know, if you want to subsidize, subsidize. But don't throw your subsidized production in the world market, because you're going to hurt everybody else, and that's what's happening right now.
Gary Hufbauer, if it is such a perverse cycle, but one that is so carved into the sort of political creed in this country, could it be that a decision by the World Trade Organization, you know, would be the little stick of dynamite that finally breaks the logjam, that finally gets American legislators and farm lobby groups saying, well, okay, if it's not going to be subsidies, what is it going to be? How do we survive?
Dick, that's a great question. Before answering that, I want to come back to the point that Adam made and also Melanie's point.
Right.
Very briefly, Adam in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, made the point that the United States imposes a lot of regulation, and that drives up the cost for farmers. And as he pointed out, you can say that in manufacturing industries and some service industries as well.
Right.
And then he went on to say, well, we ought to adjust for those higher costs with subsidies or possibly with protection. That is a very big and very basic question or point of view, and I'm glad that Adam made it. I would say, and I think most economists would say, though you can dismiss all the economists, that this would be a huge mistake to start adjusting subsidies or protection to compensate for regulatory decisions that the United States makes. If we go down that path, we are going to end up cutting off trade with a lot of countries around the world because our regulations impose higher costs than their regulations. But I want to thank Adam for raising this quite basic point. And as you come out on that, you're going to come out on the whole issue of the wisdom of international trade. Briefly on Melanie, I agree with her absolutely that the subsidies tend to tie farmers into what they did in the past, and that's a mistake. What the U.S. is now doing in tobacco, and I should also mention peanuts, is trying to get away from that system. So we have two crops. They're fairly small crops where we're moving in another direction quite wisely. Now, Dick, finally, to your question on the WTO decision, will it break the logjam? My forecast, for what it's worth, is that the U.S. will eventually lose this decision, and that will set in motion thinking about how we should change in this green direction. But I don't want to portray this like a breaking of the ice in some Alaskan river, and then suddenly, you know, there's a waterfall and everything changes overnight.
It's going to be a little slower than that.
I think we're talking a five-year process at least.
All right, 1-800-423-8255 to St. Matthews, South Carolina now. David, you're with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for having me on, Rick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm in rural America, right in the heart of cotton country here in South Carolina, and I see farmers every day. I see their struggle, and I see the struggle that the American taxpayer has with the farm subsidies. In general, it's my understanding we're looking at about 2% of the federal budget for this whole package, which includes the welfare recipients in is controlled by that 2% as well. It's a bargain. If you want to have cheap food
right.
in America and fiber, you're going to have to play the subsidy ball game.
David, let me take you back to that time when the United States signed an agreement with other countries that they would go for free trade or fair trade. I mean, that's something that this country's leaders put their signature on. And it's actually that agreement, that commitment that American leaders made, which has brought Brazil and China and India and these others to a point where they're saying, right, if you really believe in it, we're going to, you know, hold your feet to the fire and try to get rid of these subsidies. In a way, America's made its own bed, hasn't it, by saying we embrace free trade, but then trying to have it both ways on something like agriculture subsidies.
Well, it's my fear that you talk about corporate farms in America and the switch from the rural farm and the small farmer. In our area, we really don't have any corporate farms at all. They're all family-owned. The net income for the people that are doing this is way below the United States average. And if you lose this generation of farmers in the United States, whether they're cotton farmer or not, you're going to have trouble replacing them because the dollars just don't add up for a corporate investment into something that is such a struggle, especially you have to bring in the weather as well. The unknown aspect of the weather is what makes agriculture different.
It is certainly
from just about anything else in the American economy.
No, it's certainly a high-risk business. And, David, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. I'm going to go straight now to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where Philip's been listening in. And, Philip, ask you to join the conversation. What are you thinking?
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I think you gave two excellent examples of both sides of the problem. You have the American farmer, a cotton farmer who is who is tied in with companies like Monsanto and has to is required to go by those policies and the standards that they set and use their product. And then you have on the other side a cotton farmer in Nigeria or some other third world country.
So where are we with this, Philip? Is there any such thing as free or fair trade?
That's my question. What would it look like? Because it doesn't look like that right now.
Gary Huffbauer. What would it look like?
Well, it would look pretty much as it does today in Australia and Brazil, which are two countries which hardly protect at all. I don't say zero protection, but they do have very little protection, very few subsidies. And farmers make their decision on the basis of their guess as to whether the crop's going to pay for the costs. That's a big change from the way we've done it in the United States for a long time and the way it's been done in Europe for a long time and in Japan and other countries. But clearly there are countries which do farm on the basis of free markets. And in 1996, we talked about going that way. We didn't talk about going that way in the year 2002 when we had the latest Farm Act. I hope we could get back to it in a 10-year period.
Aloysio, when you try to express the sort of base, the aspiration of the Brazilian farmer, of the Brazilian in this case. Is it just like we want things to be a little bit more fair, or we want to go bang all the way to free, fair trade, get rid of all the subsidies?
Well, I think what the Brazilian farmer wants is to be able to sell his crop under normal market conditions. What they cannot do, and this is what must stop, is to compete with countries like the United States, in which the sky is the limit in terms of financing for subsidies. They cannot compete with that. They can compete with efficiency. They can compete in costs. they can't compete and sell to third countries. But
I'm asking about the case before the World Trade Organization now, and whether or not Brazil is saying get rid of the subsidies or adjust them so they're a little bit closer to fair.
Well, we are contesting the U.S. program, saying that it violates the WTO rules. It's up to the panel to decide whether we're right or not. But that's what we're going to get from this. If there's a recommendation at the end, the panel is going to say either the United States must comply or the allegations by Brazil are wrong. Let me ask
Robert Goodman for a final comment here. Robert's been actually staying on the line. I introduced him earlier as an economist at Auburn University in Alabama. The ruling's due out in May. Robert, what kind of impact do you expect it will have?
Well, I think if they do have a ruling, what they should do is come up with a ruling that says they have to outlaw subsidies in the United States, but they have to test every shipment of Argentine and Brazilian soybeans and cotton for the transgenic genes, and that would level the playing field a good bit, and make sure that they're paying for the inputs that they use. I think it would have a huge impact. It's sometimes the beauty of the system that we have now is we talk about this $1.5 billion subsidy. Only a few of those subsidies are trade disputing, and we've come through a terrible time in the cotton market when the prices have been at historical lows, lower even than they were in the 30s in real dollars. And a lot of those subsidies disappear when the price of cotton goes up. Last year, the total cotton trade distorting subsidies were probably over 20 cents a pound. Now they're probably less than 2 cents a pound with the recovery in the cotton market.
I got to stop you there, Robert, and I want to thank all of you for your assistance in helping us understand this, because I think that we will be talking more about agriculture subsidies, the cotton war, watching what happens at the World Trade Organization. With me on the program today, Robert Goodman, agricultural economist at Auburn University, Aloysio de Lima Campos, economic advisor to the Brazilian Embassy in Washington, Gary Huffbauer, senior fellow at the Institution for International Economics in Washington, and earlier in the program we talked with a couple of farmers, Shelton Wilder and Yaon Luis Pesa, speaking to us from the perspective of Longtown, Tennessee and Central Brazil. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.